Hello and welcome to season 4, episode 1 of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. We're so excited to be back here for season 4. I am Becca, and this is a podcast that features members of the Virtual Coffee community. Virtual Coffee is an intimate group of developers at all stages of their coding journey, and they're here on this podcast sharing their stories and what they've learned. We're here to share it with you. Here with me today is my co-host, Dan.
Hey, Becca. This is going to be a great season. We have a bunch of really good guests lined up. They're all, you know, Virtual Coffee members. We're going to hear about entrepreneurship. That doesn't sound right. How do you say that word?
Entrepreneurship. I also say Reese's, and that's not right either.
We're going to hear about building businesses, machine learning, accessibility, you know, civic tech, and just a lot of people's journeys and thoughts on all this stuff. And it's going to be a great season. In general, if you'd like to learn more about Virtual Coffee, or if you'd like to support us via sponsorship, you can find out more. You can find out really everything you need to know on virtualcoffee.io. We now have a lot of good resources about joining Virtual Coffee, about you know, what we do there. And you can subscribe to our newsletter. You can subscribe to our podcast. You can get to our Twitter, all that stuff on virtualcoffee.io. Today, we're starting off season 4 with Jesse Shakirian. And we had a really great conversation with her. Jesse has had a really interesting journey, and she does UX and UI design, which is user experience and user interface design and development. And it was a really great conversation. She talked about how she has like different passions that aren't directly, or at least originally weren't directly related to work, but how if you're passionate about something and you mix it into your sort of career path, that actually can be a really successful way to.
It's a really cool way to be able to bring energy to what you're doing for work, right? Like your work does not have to be your energy, but you can bring energy into your work. And I thought that was a really fun way to think about it because I haven't heard it talked about in that way.
Yeah, exactly. She has a very unique story and a unique perspective on her career and I think on in the dev world in general. So it was just a really great conversation.
Yeah. And I think that the rest of our episodes will bring something for everyone. And we're very happy to be back for season 4. So thanks for listening. Woo-hoo. We start every episode of the podcast like we start every Virtual Coffee. We introduce ourselves with our name, where we're from, what we do, and a random check-in question. Today's question is, what is your favorite magical or mythological animal? We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, I'm Becca. I am a front-end developer from a small town in Ohio. And my favorite magical or mythological animal is, I can't remember anything. I would like to say unicorn, but I am not convinced that there's no such thing as unicorns. Is Pegasus a unicorn that flies? Because I feel like...
I don't think a Pegasus is a unicorn. I think it's just a horse that flies.
Well, my favorite mythological animal is Unicorn Pegasus. That's it.
I'm sure there's a name for that somewhere. I'm sure somebody has written a name. Anyway, hi, I'm Dan. I am a front-end developer in Cleveland. And I don't have a good answer for this. I did like the griffins. Is that the one in Harry Potter with the? It's like a bird with the
Gryffindor.
Oh well,
is that who you are?
No. Like the birds, they it's like a lion, you know, body and a bird head, and it has wings. I don't know. I think that's what it is. You know, they like rescue it. You know, it's like mm-hmm. It like attacks somebody and all that stuff. Anyway, I used to play Magic: The Gathering back in the day, and there was. There's a bunch of them in there. You know, I had like a whole, I always liked them. They're cool. So that's going to be my answer. Assuming that I picked the right name, Griffin. I think that's it.
Hi, I'm Jessie. I'm a UX designer in Los Angeles. And let's see. I feel like I'm going to go with Pegasus just because Pegasus was always my favorite. Like I don't know if you guys remember the Hercules movie, the Disney one, and Pegasus was like was the best. I just loved him.
I actually have not ever watched it. I tried watching it with my kids because I wanted to, you know, and like and they were, Ben was not that interested in it at the time, so I'm gonna give it a shot again because I was enjoying it. You know, it's like one of those with, you know, you got a 4 or 5 year old and it's like hit or miss whether they'll actually pay attention to something that that is good. But I'm glad that you said that's good, because I'm gonna try and swing back to that movie again. I have this whole list of movies that like I want him to watch so that I can watch.
You know, it's got a solid soundtrack. I remember watching it when I babysat in high school, and I still remember a lot of the soundtrack.
It's really, yeah, and there's a lot of like it's funny for adults too. Because I recently rewatched it maybe a year ago, and I was like, oh, this movie's still hilarious. It's still, there's a reason why it's still at the top of my, one of my favorites.
Didn't you mention this? Okay, I looked it up. It's an alicorn.
Looked it up too. Oh, okay, or a unipeg or a pegacorn.
I also, those are awful. Unipeg is really awful. Yeah, that's a really bad one. Unipegasus is a very unimaginative one that's showing up here too.
Yeah, they're all
I think alicorn is the right, I think that's,
I think it needs its own name, because these are really, Pegasus is like a very good name. It sounds excellent, but all of these sound.
Unipeg. All right, it's Unipeg. That's Becca's favorite animal.
It's Unipeg. Yep.
You heard it here first.
That's right.
Oh, Jesse, thank you so much for being here with us today. We always love to get started with your origin story. So where have you been and how did you get to this point in your career?
I have a very non-traditional path into tech. Prior to the pandemic, I was going back to school to be a medical lab tech, and then pandemic happened and I moved home and I needed to start over. So I took a career assessment to see like what else I could do. And I got a 100% match with programming, which was super weird. And I was like, programming? Like, I don't know. Okay, let's try it, because I don't have anything else going on. So I started teaching myself how to code. And by the end of 2020, I was freelancing. I just basically was like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And took some freelancing jobs and pretty quickly realized that I loved everything that happened before it was time to code. And so that's when I sort of switched gears into UX. But I still continue to use all of my development stuff as well. So, yeah, that's kind of awesome. How I ended up here.
So prior to taking that assessment, what was your experience with tech and computers?
None.
Yeah.
All I knew about tech is that people code, like we're coders, and that was it.
That's so awesome.
Did your experience match your perspective, your pre-coding perspective?
It totally blew it away, honestly, because I was like, oh my God, there's this whole world. And then I pretty soon realized that like, oh, every company is a tech company now. So. Mm-hmm. That's really like a game changer, and it's up to you what you want to make of it. And I've never seen an industry like that before.
That is such a good point. I love that. And I also came from a very non-technical background. I was maybe the most technical English teacher. So I taught people about presentations and integrating technology into the classroom, and nothing to do with coding. And so it was there's a real, I think, different perspective almost if you don't have that background, because there's a lot of assumptions in what people say about technology. Even now, that sometimes I have to ask, like, yes, I would love to know what you are talking about, but I don't have that experience with that. And so there's a lot of different conversations, but good conversations, I think, that happen as a result of that. Okay, so now you did this pivot into UX, UI. I think it's a pivot, but maybe you don't. So I'll let you talk about that for a second. I think that when you first started coming to Virtual Coffee is when I started to hear you talk more about that. So what got you interested in that aspect of things? And actually, could you define UX and UI first?
Sure. So UX is like the organization of the site, right? Like, so which pages go where, and where does the content go that it makes sense? What's the research on, like, who uses this website? The UI is more like, where does the button go? How does particular components work? Like, there's still visual components in UX, but also, like, how those visual components actually work for the user, I guess, would probably be a way to describe it. Actually, like, it's one of those things, UX versus UI, like, comes up all the time in, like, UX circles, and it's very, like, it's very interesting. So, yeah, I actually started Virtual Coffee around the holidays last year, and I'm still doing dev stuff, and, like, you know, this community is so great, and then I started falling out of love with, like, JavaScript pretty quickly, because I was like, I don't know about this stuff, like, programming, that career assessment was wrong, basically, and then spent quite a bit of time, basically kind of networked my way into an apprenticeship at a design agency, like, local to me, and then so once I started kind of getting in the groove with that, I was like, man, like, I should come back to Virtual Coffee because it was really fun. But then I wasn't sure. I was like, but there's so many devs and not too many, like, UX people, so would it still be okay? And that's when I kind of started, like, messaging you, Becca, of like, can I come back? And you're like, duh, yes.
That's not what I said, for the record.
Okay, I put an LA twist on that.
That's really interesting, though. The separation between that is, like you said, it's, like, really blurry. And even between development, you know, I would say that anybody who's developing is probably like making some UX decisions. So UX is like user experience, right? And mm-hmm. making some decisions, whether or not, you know, so depends on the project, I suppose, how much is dictated, right, to the developer. But even at the lowest level, you're still affecting, you know, somebody's going to use the thing that you're making, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when you're coding, you know, you have an idea of what the experience is going to be for the user and what the interface, right? So UI is user interface, so what the interface is going to look like. And lots of times when you're coding, then you get stuck into, okay, I know what I want this thing to do, you know, and it's like, then it's, you know, it can be hard to actually get it to do it or whatever. And that is the part maybe that you, I'm putting words in your mouth, but like that you didn't enjoy as much, but like actually laying out the experience for a user and like how things should happen and, you know, what people should see, stuff like that, is what you were more interested in. Is that right?
I guess it was more like, okay, so like I had a freelance project where I worked like end to end. So in my like 20s, I wrote a lot. So I upselled a little bit and was like, oh, we can write some copy, you know, and do some content strategy work. And so we started from beginning to end. And it was more like, oh, like how do I understand a website, right? Or an app or whatever. And how do I almost categorize? And it gets very like nerdy, right? Like, you know, what is the hierarchy? Like, what's the most important thing? What's less of a priority? And things like that. And that helps me sort of understand the whole picture. And that's when I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And so I thought that I was like, yeah, okay, like UX all in. And then I was like, but yeah, right. Like you talk about it's like an onion and the layers of like, okay, there's UX, but then you go deeper than that and the UX needs to be coded, but then the visual design needs to play a part just as important. And is the context correct? Like in your content strategy, like there's so many components that I feel like I never left coding in some ways because I'm always still thinking about it. How do you implement a design change on a coding level, right? Can you implement that, you know, legacy code and all sorts of things, you know, you don't have the source code, then what, you know? And mm-hmm. so the skills I learned as a coder still help me with my work today because I'm now have a more holistic approach to design. Like if I can, if a client said, oh, I really like this on a website, where I can tell like, oh, is that JavaScript or, oh, I think that might be React. I'm going to go research that, you know? And so it still provides so much value, and the skills that I learned, the analytical skills, problem solving skills, and on a coding level, like I've never had anything quite like that before, if that makes sense. Like that's been invaluable.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can see how that experience would be really helpful, maybe even crucial to somebody who's going to be making high level UX decisions, you know, for especially for websites and stuff, because like you said, there's so many things that go into all of those decisions, you know, and if you only have one piece of the puzzle in your mind, well, you'll be limited, I suppose, you know, about the decisions you can make and things like that. I think that's really cool. Can you talk, you said you got an apprenticeship with a studio, and could you talk a little bit about that experience? Just the, and now I'm asking more like from not coding or not the like UX, like what you're actually doing, but like how did the apprenticeship like thing work? Because I haven't talked to very many people who've actually gone through a formal apprenticeship, and I'm very interested to hear like about that. So just kind of talk about that for a bit.
Yeah. So I have a local UX group, and so one of the people who run that UX group, they have a design agency. And so I sort of networked my way into that local group of I was looking for a UX job, and there was a recruiter, and he was like, oh, hey, you live in our area. You should join our group. And I was like, oh, cool. I had no idea there was a UX group here. And so, you know, as I was hanging out on that group, it was like on Discord, and I was looking up, you know, on LinkedIn, trying to find some stuff about like who does these different parts of UX. And I ended up seeing one of the people in our group, and I was like, oh my God, hey, that's her. And so I messaged her and was like, hey, you know, I saw that you do some UX stuff. Like, that's really interesting. And so she was like, hey, you know, I run the design agency, and we have this apprenticeship program. And so why don't you fill out an application? Then I got in, and so I did about 6 months of apprenticeship where we worked on different projects. So some were personal projects. For anybody who doesn't know, like, I'm now obsessed with chess because of Queen's Gambit. And so that was one project. And then I had some other things like the Information Architecture Conference, which I worked on last year, and now I'm back on this year. And so I learned, I gained a lot of skills by being an apprentice and working on these projects and sort of getting a more real world experience about how to do UX, and then sort of brought in like my coding experience because my boss is not a coder. So she'd be like, oh, so wait, what do you think about Ghost? You know, and I want to move all my stuff to Ghost, you know? So then we talk about that. And then, yeah, so yeah. And then my apprenticeship, that was 6 months. So this was January when I started. And then by June, I was done, like officially, like, you know, promoted to a UX designer. And then by July, we found a contract job that was just a good fit for me. So I started that, and that was more about like incorporating some machine learning aspects. And I had already been learning Python. And so, yeah, that's basically been my journey with my apprenticeship. And now I have about to be two apprentices of my own as they are starting their journeys into UX. So that's really cool.
That's very really cool. Exciting. Yeah.
Do you feel like that was kind of what you needed? Because it sounds like before, when you were doing web dev kind of stuff, it wasn't a good fit. And then that change seems like it was what you needed to kind of, you know, get you excited about what you were doing.
Yeah, that's the great thing, is the chess stuff is what brought me back to coding, because like the chess engines and like the bots and things, they're very good at particular things, but there's a lot of like usability things that I really have a problem with. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to learn to code again specifically to deal with this, and I need to use Python and, you know, some understand some components of machine learning to do that. And so that was like, I was really nervous about it, but it ended up being really fun, and partly because I already had the experience of JavaScript. So maybe JavaScript wasn't my best choice as a first language, but it helps so much learning Python because I already had those fundamental skills. And so that was really great because I was like, oh, this coding is really fun. So it became like another piece, right? And then I'm like, okay, so we're at the UX stuff. We're doing some more coding stuff. Like, okay, cool. So I can kind of sit with this and this feels good, right? It's just about like, what's the language that's going to click with you? And that is something I didn't understand when I first started because I really did all the JavaScript. It was just stressed me out so much. But you know, turning around back in Python, I'm like, oh, cool. This is awesome. Should have chosen Python first.
I think that investment that comes from when you're solving a problem that you care about goes a really long way allowing you to become interested in what you're working on. I mean, for sure, mm-hmm. you could do projects that you're not interested in the content or what you're working with. But I find like it gets really exciting when you're like, I love this thing and I know I can make it better, right?
Mm-hmm. And it also becomes like, I know I can make it better, but also no one else is going to make it better, at least in the way that you know you will. So then it becomes like, I kind of have to do this. And that's what it felt like. I was like, okay, these chat engines have some usability components that I really, really don't like. And they're clearly made by programmers, like for chess players who play a lot. And I'm a beginner, so this isn't really like beginner oriented. And that was my sort of initial quandary, right? Of like, okay, how do I fix this? Okay, I got to start, go back and learn Python. Okay. But yeah, that really helps. Like knowing you have something passionate about that you want to spend 100 hours or whatever working on it, like it makes a big difference. And when I started, I didn't know because I was just kind of feeling around in the dark going, okay, where do I start? Oh, web dev. Okay, let's start there. You know?
Yeah, I think the, you know, there's a bunch of different pieces, obviously, to learning, especially when you're learning on your own like this. And you know, finding a language that you're comfortable in is part of it for sure. But I would imagine, and what I've experienced myself and noticed through other people is, you know, having a project that you care about, like you guys were just saying, goes such a long way, right? Because then it doesn't matter as much if the syntax is weird in whatever language you're using or whatever. Because if you if you're excited about the project, then it's just like smooths everything out so much for me, at least. It seems like maybe for you too. The like, I don't know, just the being in there, you know, like who cares how many hours you're doing on it, you know what I mean? Like that sort of feeling when you get in that group is really cool. It's very exciting.
Yeah, no, it is. And there's something really kind of fun about like, okay, so everybody like in the UX world pretty much knows me as like the chess lady. And so there's something really fun about like how people know me that way. And I'm like, okay, so personal branding, check, done, right? But also that it becomes like, well, if people get hooked on like, you can't fake passion, right? And that's a driving force because things need to get done. And if you're passionate about it, then it will go a long way and everybody will notice it. And the amount of people I've found who are like, I don't know anything about chess, but like, it's really cool watching this journey, right? And that just becomes really, really fun. I'm like, oh, okay, so it's motivating, right? I'm not being boring or whatever. You know what I mean? Like I guess it's social media. You know, if you don't want to follow somebody, you don't have to. But at the same time, who it brings to you, who gravitates to you, that also becomes really interesting because it's people I probably never would have thought to talk to or anything like that, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things too, where since it's very clearly an organic thing for you, you know, everybody can tell that, and you know, everybody can tell you're passionate as well, but it's, you know, you mentioned personal branding and that's always, you know, can be a weird place to be, but like I think leaning into something you're passionate about like this is always a smart move, you know, and it's, I kind of lost my point. I was going to say something about, you can tell when somebody wants to make a personal brand, but they don't have a thing like that, you know, and they're forcing it or whatever.
It's superficial.
Yeah. Right. And, I don't know. It's cool. And I think this is good advice for other people, you know, is finding something like that and finding ways to use it to learn more or to spread your, you know, spread your networking or all of that stuff, all the stuff that you've been doing. It's very cool. And like Chess says, plus, well, it just got, I don't know, popular is not the right word, but like it just got some Chess just got some press right with the Queen's Gambit, you know? So like people are kind of like back into it again, you know? Which is always interesting to see too. So I don't know. Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah. I will say that I remember talking to a hiring manager who said that they hired a developer who made a website about sandwiches. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, okay. Like that dude just loved sandwiches, but it worked because it showed on his, you know, on his portfolio. And so it's like, that's why I love that. Like before I started playing chess, I thought it was boring and you had to be like really smart to understand it. And I was just like, oh, I'm not that intelligent to do it. But really it's just about knowing what your passion is, but like how do you use that for your strengths and your weaknesses to show others, to show hiring managers what you can do. It's just a vessel, right? It should be the thing that you really love.
I think it's such great advice too, because we hear a lot of people say like you have to be excited about tech. And I think that you can be excited about tech, but you can be excited about something else and use tech to showcase that thing. And I think that can be a really great approach, because you're right. Like when you're excited about something and other people get excited around you, I don't know. It just creates this like amazing energy. And I just love that feeling of, I really enjoy this. And now like full Becca comes out like in those situations where I can be excited and passionate about something. We can all talk about it together in this like very unique way that doesn't happen when you're kind of feeling out the industry or the conversation or the group. You can kind of let that go a little bit and just be excited and allow everyone to be excited in the conversation with you. And that just feels, I mean, great. It feels productive, but it feels deep and deeper than things that I think we normally feel when we stick to things that, you know, maybe we don't really get excited about, or we feel like, well, we should be excited about this. So this is what we should talk about, you know, talk about what you want to talk about. And that's how you find that like really fun space.
Yeah. I think I totally agree. Right. That's not about chasing the trends, because the trends come and go. And to me, it was the realization that like tech is so big. And so if you make it what you want, then you create the space that you wish you want to see, and other people will be pretty happy. If, you know, there's always at least one person who's like, oh, hey, you have just carved out the space of like building your own like Magic the Gathering database. Oh, cool. You know what? I didn't like that this other database doesn't have X, Y, and Z, right? So it's so framed, right? You don't have to fit into any particular component. Like, yeah, you could chase the clout, but for what? Like that's very superficial. And it's definitely not about like, I feel like the tech definitely comes second rather than first, right? It's about making the thing that you want to see. And that could be the software, which is great, but it could also be something else, something that everybody, any like non-tech people can use too.
Yeah, I love that. And like, even just further on this point, like if you are super into something, you don't have to, and you were kind of saying this too, but you don't have to make like the business decisions, you know, like it doesn't have to be some successful product that you're going to sell or something, you know, necessarily, right? The like sandwich website probably isn't making a ton of money, but the guy was into it and like had some fun and, you know, was able to learn some stuff and probably helped him get a job, all that stuff. You know, it's I don't know, it's cool. I do feel that sometimes people lean too hard on what am I getting out of this? Or what am I like, what can I turn this into? Like you said, like the cloud or the, any of the profit or any of that stuff, you know, and when it's something you are just, when you, when it's something you just care about like that, it's, I don't know, the learning just comes naturally. I feel like the benefits come out of space.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was done.
I was actually just kind of thinking about how, like, you know, when there's a lot of people coming out of boot camps and hiring managers start to see the same projects over and over, right? So it's always like the Stu app and the astrology app and the, you know, tic-tac-toe. Like, so how do you stand out, right? And you have to be honest with yourself. Like, what's something that I want to put the time on and you know, be able to talk about with every hire, every interview, you know, and it should be something that shows that that excitement. Like, it's great to have made a tic-tac-toe app or a to-do app, but at the same time, like, what's a problem that you want to solve that's going to help you stand out, especially for when you're just trying to get your foot in the door, right? And you have to really be memorable, but you have to just be yourself and you have to show that, you know, and that's, that can be hard for people.
I think that's such great advice. And I think that that's something that you just really have to recognize and work on. Like, it's okay to be different than other people. And I think even traditional schooling really pushes towards the sanitization of who you are, right? And like, well, what are your achievements, right? And so for a lot of us, it's just ingrained in our mindset that the achievements are who we are. But that's not it. It's about, you know, the things that we enjoy, the things that we are passionate about, and being able to share those things. And, you know, sometimes it requires vulnerability, and sometimes it could be scary because, you know, other people are out there and they're like, I built this great thing. And then you play that comparison game. Like, well, is my thing as good as that? But I think that you're always winning if you are working towards something that you enjoy doing or that you're passionate about. And it doesn't have to be tech related. I was talking with a couple of members in the co-working room yesterday. How would we like new members to introduce themselves, right? Like, what, when they introduce themselves in the welcome channel, what should we ask them? And what everybody said was, what's something outside of tech that you enjoy, right? Because those are the fun connections that you make. And I think it was Kirk, and he was like, well, you know, I saw somebody said they like fishing, and then somebody else responded about the fishing, and now they're talking like all of this cool and fun stuff. And, you know, if somebody came in, actually, I could probably tell you all of the people who said, I like weightlifting. Like, yes, me too, right? Yeah. But if you asked me to name all of the front-end developers, I couldn't, definitely couldn't do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, because we're people, right? We have multifaceted, you know, interests, and that's what makes us unique. And so why shouldn't we show that this is how I am different, right? But for good, not in like a bad way or anything like that, you know, being different is good.
Right. And I think that if you find companies too that enjoy that, or if they mention that, then that's a good indication. Like, look, this person is interested in more than just my tech stack. They're interested in the person in front of them. And that's a really good place to start.
Absolutely.
I had something to say before. Now it's totally gone. It was about... Yeah, it was a totally different topic. So if we, I didn't want to, that's why, you know, it was.
Go for it.
All right. What I was going to ask was, oh, kind of going back to circling all the way back to sort of toward the beginning of the conversation, but we were talking about your work and what you're doing now. And so you're on your own freelancing now, is that right?
So I'm doing, wrapping up a contract project for our agency, but, yeah. So generally I'm pretty much freelancing otherwise.
Yeah. This is what made me, this is how I got here was we were talking about, this being yourself and, you know, companies hiring you and stuff like that. And I've been independent, you know, for my entire career. So it's like one of the benefits of that is, for me is being able to be myself a lot more, you know. And I was wondering if that had, like had entered in your thought process about instead of, you know, like doing contract work and stuff like that, as opposed to trying to get hired, or maybe you are trying to get hired. I'm not sure, but like if you've decided to stay on the contracting route, you know, whether any of that sort of thought went into your decision making process.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I'm interested in contract work. I'm still kind of, I think I'll be almost a full year of contracting or general freelancing. So this has been a really different experience from going from like pre-tech, like just having like a regular stable job. And I think some part of it is like the freedom of contract work, and I can pick and choose what jobs I'm excited about. And that's really freeing, even though it's more puts you more in free fall if a job ends too early or they don't pick you up for the next round and things like that. But I do find it more rewarding to be able to pick what I want to work on. And that I think is also a part of it, of just accepting that this is who I am. And I kind of have a bit of an entrepreneurial bug, and I kind of just have to accept that because, you know, I don't know how much like full-time, like a you know, regular stable job would fit my like personality, I guess. And that becomes really fun when people are like, oh, hey, you know what, I have this thing and I think you'd be really perfect to like work on this. And then it's like, yeah, okay, like you thought I would be a good fit, you know, instead of having to, you know, argue for why I think I would be a good fit in a company elsewhere. You know, so that really becomes really energizing because I'm now accepting myself for my strengths and weaknesses career-wise. And that was something I always felt like I had to find a stable job and just do the 9-to-5 kind of grind, but also just accepting that like maybe that's not the right fit for me because it's quite taxing and, you know, things like that. So it's much more fun to be working in like quote unquote sprinting times of contract work, if you break contract work. But, you know, I like to dig deep. So that works really well for me. That I think it's really exciting to be like, you know what, this is works better for me. It's not necessarily the status quo, and it's not quite as, you know, what's what I'm looking for. Like, it's not as, it's not the norm. You know what I mean?
Like, I was going to say normal.
Yeah, right. It's not the norm, but it's okay to accept that that's not just not going to work as well. That might change, and that's the thing, right? Yeah. I might say right now, this isn't it. But 6 months from now, I might be like, you know what? I'm tired of writing all those proposals and then getting rejected or not hearing from them for 3 months or whatever. You know, I just want to clock in, clock out, or a year from now or 5 years from now, whatever. So that's also okay too. And then maybe one day I want to come back to freelance.
Such a good mindset.
Yeah. But it's always about like having things open, right? And just seeing where things go. That's always kind of been the thing with tech for me, is like, okay, I'll just see what happens. 100% math with programming. All right, I guess I'll try it. What's the worst that can happen, right? I don't like it.
I love the way you said all of that. It lines up a lot with the way that I felt too. And I just appreciated that. My brain is fried today. The freedom and the ability to be more individual, I think is one of those things. I've suggested freelancing to people before, and they've like laughed at me or scoffed at me or whatever, not laughed at me, but you know, like laughed at the idea. Mm-hmm. And, it's nice to hear somebody like you that has been successful and enjoys it and, you know, has the like sort of open-mindedness about it as well. You know, it seems like a healthy mindset about the whole thing, too.
I was going to say, when I was in boot camp, before I was maybe like in my last 3 months, so it took me about a year, I went to this talk with a founder of an organization. And I said, you know, I think I would really like to freelance. I'm a mom. I like the flexible schedule. And, you know, to not be working 40 hours a week. And his response to me was, don't sell yourself short. And I'm like, I don't know that that's accurate. Like, I don't think I'm selling myself short. I didn't say that I thought that I couldn't do the work. I said, this is what I'm looking for. And there were so many people who said, you won't be able to find a job coming out of boot camp as a freelancer. And I did, like, you know, very quickly. And so it is, I mean, a lot of it's about putting yourself out there, but it's been, for me, a great experience. And Jesse, one of the things that you said about, trying to think of the exact words, but I can't right now, something about, you know, I think you would be great for this position, right? And so I've interviewed for full-time work, and I've interviewed or had conversations for contract work. And like, one of the things I like about contract work so far, most of them have started because of conversations. It's not been this huge interview process where I feel like I need to prove myself. I think, like you were saying, of do you think that I'm good enough? No, like, there's already an established understanding, and it's come through networking that, like, this would be a good fit. Now let's continue this conversation, right? And that's been huge. And one of the reasons why I continue to prefer that work, because the anxiety that comes with not only the interview process, but all of the stuff that doesn't make sense to me. I get, like, super frustrated. Like, why are we even doing this? Like, there's not a point in doing this portion of the interview or doing this portion of the application. And that inefficiency just, for me, sends off like these red flags in my brain where my brain is like, nope, not going to do this, you know? And so it's nice to just be able to work together with people who are focused on doing that, like working together and enjoying each other's presence, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think that the interesting thing about like the contract job I'm on right now has been the internal team. They've asked, how can we help you? And it's just like, wow, that's the first time I think I've ever heard that. But that doesn't mean that people don't do it. But in terms of, like, I've, you know, done freelance work with other freelancers, and then we just kind of work together. But to have an internal team being like, hey, we want to help you because you're helping us, and that was really cool and really welcoming, rather than, like, I guess the stress of being like the new person to the team and being like, oh my god, I have to catch up and do all this stuff. But no, I work completely separately from the internal team, and I just do my thing and they just do their thing, and we come together when we need to and we help each other, but then we still work separately. So that's the freedom, right? Of, like, you know, I might not know everything about what they've done or, like, what they're working on as I continue to work, but at the same time, like, it's like a different kind of camaraderie, I guess, even though it's short term.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's always an interesting interface, as well as the, you know, freelance, especially with a company that has developers, you know. So lots of times if you freelance, you'll freelance just to somebody who needs something but doesn't have any capability, you know. And then other times, like you're doing now, you're helping out a team that has developers, you know, and that's in my experience, has been an interesting sort of thing to see how it all works, you know. It sounds like you're in a really good spot, a really good position as far as communication and contracting stuff with your current contract. That's really cool. Have you had any other, I mean, you don't need to say any, like, any bad experiences, but, like, has that been the norm, I suppose, is my question. You know, when you're dealing with other teams, or has there been any other, you know, interesting situations that have come up?
No, I mean, mostly this is actually my first, like, really big, like, a you know, enterprise type company. So, everything I've done prior has been, like, really small, like, small-time clients or subcontracting work for other freelancers and just my freelance network and things like that. So that's why I was like, oh, this is really cool. We get to come in, we get to help people out. And then if they want to keep working with us, that's great. And if not, then, you know, that's okay. There's always other stuff to do. And that was just kind of kind of nice to see that you can get like a peek into a team and see, do I like them? Do I not like them? Do I like this company? Is that something I want to keep working on? Is that a company that I might want to go from contractor to being pulled in-house? Like, you have options, and that's really exciting. It's not just like, oh, I interviewed at this place, you know, five times and they finally, you know, want to do it, but the pay isn't as good and I don't know what I'm about to walk into. You know what I mean? Like, you already know. At least a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I mean, that's a great point too. And that occurred, like, something that you just said, I was going to say, made me have a thought, which is a really ridiculous sentence. Contracting, you know, affords companies flexibility too, right? So when you're hiring a contractor, I mean, contracts differ the setup, you know, lots of times they're for a fixed date or whatever, either a fixed project or a fixed date, you know, but either way, it's like, you get freedom on both sides, right? Because you get the company doesn't have to make a permanent decision. You know, if you're hiring somebody full time, the expectation would not be for just 6 months. You know what I mean? And so, I don't know. I think that's another benefit that people maybe overlook sometimes the benefit to the company. So you can try somebody out like that. You know, you can think about hiring them, or you can just keep them contracting, things like that. It's a cool way to have new people join your team or help out with your team in certain situations, you know, without having to set aside the budget for a whole new, you know, an entire employee. You know, it's cool.
You also get the chance to try new stuff in like different industries, and that's always really cool because you're like, you know, this one I got some, you know, some experience. Like So I talked about a little bit how I worked. I was trying to go into medicine before pandemic, and this is like a medical company. So now I get to try putting my knowledge in a different way that I never, ever would have thought about. And I'm like, do I like it? Do I not? You know, do I still think that this would be a good way to use the skills, like the non-traditional skills I already have in a more like traditional tech way? You know, like that's really cool. And I try to tell people like, oh, you guys should take like other devs who are just starting, like take freelancing work, and they're like, oh no, like it's so scary to put yourself out there, and how do I figure out how much to charge, or how do I do this? But honestly, like your communication skills that you work on, your project management skills, those are all really good things to have. And when you do decide to like try to go for an interview, you already have that skills, and you can say, oh, I worked on this client with, you know, we did this, that, and the other, and here's the limitations they had and things like that. That's really valuable, especially if you're coming out of a boot camp or something. Like, it gives you experience that other graduates might not have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think kind of what you've been talking about there, this idea of like getting energy and being excited to try different things is awesome. And I also love that. But there's maybe a fine line between trying new things and spreading yourself thin, especially when you're looking at lots of different potential projects. Do you have any good tips or advice on like how to not do that?
I'm still learning how to do that. I am very much of the opinion of like try everything, because then you'll find out what you like and what you don't like. But at the same time, like when you overcommit, it's really hard to remember. Like, so I've been trying to like write this down, like, okay, I overcommitted by doing this, this, and this, and I need to learn how to say no. But at the same time, you're learning how to say no in a way that helps give you depth in other places. So it's not that you're rejecting everything. It's like you're saying, okay, I really want to focus on these things, and I really want to, you know, take this freelancing job that will help maybe give me some better networking skills, and B, you know, I can put this on my portfolio about this you know, work project or something. And this will go farther than to say yes and agree to the short term thing that maybe is more stress or things like that.
I really love that, especially this idea of writing down what you've done to get myself in this situation. Yeah. Right. I feel like there's something that can allow me to analyze, okay, this is not the right decision for you right now. It's okay to put it off because, you know, depth over breadth a lot of the times. And that can be really, really hard when it's right in front of you and you think, I might not have this opportunity again. But, you know, like making it a deliberate part of your decision-making process is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of it for me was just kind of understanding that, like, okay, like when I first started in tech, right, it was good to like try everything because, you know, just go to this webinar, go to this networking meeting and go to, you know, whatever. And then at a certain point, I realized like I'm kind of already in tech and now I need to stop going to everything. Right. And then it became like, okay, but I don't have to accept everything that comes to me. I can say no. And I can, because then it just sort of became like the serotonin boost of like, yes, I will sign up for this webinar. Yes, I will do this. Okay, I'll take that contract job. Right. But at a certain point, like I have to be honest about how much time I have. And that was like really weird. I was like, oh, right. I have like a finite amount of time and boundaries and, you know, don't want to burn out. So I should really like try to ignore the serotonin boost of saying yes to things and start focusing on the like longer term thing, which is very difficult for me because it's really impulsive to be like, yes, I'll do that. Yes, I'll do that. Yeah. And so now I'm like, long term? What is long term? I have to think about that now.
Yeah. I feel that.
Yeah. You could, for our listeners, Beck and I were both emphatically nodding. just talking. And I'm glad you talked about that, Jesse, because it can be hard. And that actually can be one of the hidden dangers of being independent, you know, is that. When you make your own decisions, you get the freedom, but then you get the danger of that too, you know? So it seems like you're doing a good job of kind of balancing everything though.
That's Thank cool. you. I try my best, right? And it's how do you avoid burnout? Cause burnout is prevalent everywhere. So like in tech, right? But you know, we talk about like, oh, you are a person and you have a life, you know, life goes on and you are not your tech stack or your job, your title. But that's especially hard when you freelance, right? Because you're like, oh, cool. So work hours start to blend together and, you know, yeah, deadlines are deadlines. And yeah, so I am, that's hard for me. That's about where I am right now.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a real challenge for all of us who are working through that, especially like when we are doing things that we enjoy doing. It's really hard to stop doing something that you like doing. But there is something to be said for having boundaries for things. And like you said, you are not your tech stack. And I think that that's such a good point to make. We're at about time now, but is there any bit of advice, whether you'd give to the listeners or even to your past self, to say like, okay, this is how you bring the big energy or find that thing that will get you excited about moving forward?
I think it's mostly about being honest with yourself. If you know, okay, maybe this to-do app that everybody else has done is not really like making me excited, then you should do what excites you. Like if you have a side project where, you know, like that sandwich guy, like maybe you're making a database of all the sandwiches in every like culture and that's what makes you excited. You should do that and then talk about how excited you are about sandwiches, because the only way to know like who else is also thinking about sandwiches? You know, we're just going with this analogy now. So you know, that's it. Like, just be honest. Be, you know, like, okay, so when I started with my chess stuff, I was like, I don't know how far this is going to take me, but I'm really interested in it. And I just needed somewhere to talk about it. And so I would just talk about it online. And I would blog about it because I'm a writer at heart and I can't not write about things. So that's just, it just needed an outlet. I just didn't expect that it would do all these other things that have happened since. And so, don't be afraid to be yourself, because there's only one of you. And, you know, that's becomes like this really, really great thing. And it's not worth trying to fit into the mold of every other person. You know, if you're a boot camp grad, don't be just another boot camp grad. You know, be yourself who also happens to be a boot camp grad.
I love that. Thank you so much. And thank you for being here with us. We'll drop all of your links and things in the show notes so listeners can find you. Thanks again, Jesse, for being here today.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. This episode was produced by Dan Ott and Becca Harrott-Weigel and was edited by Andy Bonjour at Good Day Communications. If you have questions or comments, you can hit us up on Twitter at virtualcoffee.io or email us at podcast@virtualcoffee.io. You can find the show notes, sign up for our newsletter, check out any of our other resources on our website at virtualcoffee.io. And of course, join us for our virtual coffee chats every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern and Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern. Please subscribe to our podcast and be sure to leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.